Hello and welcome to the Social Recruiting Show. I'm Katrina Collier. I'm of course author of the Robot Proof Recruiter, which Charlotte might have one of and she's forgetting to show us.
Oh yeah.
I'm also a facilitator and a speaker. I'm of course joined by my very talented talent acquisition professional co-host, the one, the only, the amazing Glenn Martin.
Hola.
Thank God you did that this week. And we're today, I'm actually really excited about this topic. And we're joined by another talented talent acquisition professional, the one, the only, the amazing Charlotte Mummery. Welcome to the Social Recruiting Show.
Yay, thanks for having me, guys.
You're welcome.
Very welcome indeed.
Thanks.
So,
I'm too. I'm full of too many beans today.
Yeah. Can I just say, obviously, the opening to the show, that was really smooth. That was really well delivered.
And you were trying to make me laugh with your pulled faces.
Natural. Exactly. Just a natural.
Quality. Well, let's open. Charlotte, tell us how you got into the wonderful world of recruitment.
I was unemployed and I needed a job. I don't think anybody wakes up one day at school and says, you know what? I think talent acquisition is going to be the profession for me.
I'm going to sell people.
Yeah, I think most people just end up there by accident. Long story short, I was asked to leave university partway through my studies. We can talk about that on another show, maybe. I jobbed around doing a couple of temp jobs. I got a call from Kelly Services back in the day when they used to be on High Street. Did a typing test, did a comprehension test, answered the phone.
Wow.
Hang on.
Are we on the electric typewriter or are we on the... No, that's me showing my age. No, I was on the one before.
There was a keyboard and a monitor. And I had to get like a practice fake phone call with somebody sitting behind me, which was really freaky. And then they rang me and said, so you're going to go to an office in Newcastle and you're going to do something in what's called personnel. I was like, all right, fine. It's 10 weeks. It's minimum wage. And that job was being a graduate recruitment administrator at Accenture in Newcastle. And my 10 weeks minimum wage turned into 8.5 years. And the rest is history.
Whoa, man. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I can certainly relate to the interview process for getting into recruitment. Mine was over a coffee. And the guy that was offering me the job was like, yeah, you probably have to shave the beard a little. And that was it.
But that's what they told
what
me.
Happened? I'm trying to think if you had a beard at spring or not. I can't even remember.
Yeah, I did.
And that was a beard.
Oh my god, I used to love spring back in the day. They were a supplier of us.
Not spring personnel, spring technology.
Spring technology.
Hi Van. Vanessa Rath is tuning in on Facebook. Because I haven't worked out how I can answer the LinkedIn questions. I can't answer the Facebook ones.
What is the subject of the show this week?
I'm actually really excited about it. So we're talking mentoring. Now, before anybody thinks we're talking about my mentee, we are not. Emma is amazing. But I wanted to talk about mentoring. And the reason I wanted to talk about it, and I'm going to sound really shocking saying this, is people ask me to be their mentor, and then it becomes just a time suck. I only have so much time, right? Yeah. So for me to give up a section of time, which means giving up a section of paying work, because I work for myself. So it's a controversial topic. We might offend people. We're not meaning to. Actually, ultimately, I'd love mentees to gain from it, to know this is how we go about it. So you have mentored, right, Charlotte? So hence, you're stuck here.
I have, in the middle,
in the hot seat, being stared at.
It's a funny thing because I think about it from both perspectives, because like most of us who ended up in recruitment by accident, we were probably mentored ourselves by someone along the way. But in the teams that I've managed, I think particularly the last couple of jobs I've had, my time at Nestle, my time currently at Siemens Software, the people that are in my team that report to me, you have both a coaching and a mentoring relationship with them. Mm. I also mentor a couple of people in other parts of the business. So maybe some skills-based related stuff around people or talent with HR colleagues or business colleagues. And those mentoring relationships, if I look back, they've all been quite different and I've had quite different experiences based on the person, the time, the subject. And I think, you know, I know we've got like an hour today, but this is one that you could run and run.
Oh, don't worry, we're not making you sit here for an hour. Just 45. We're giving you 15 minutes to recover before your next meeting. Oh, sorry, Glenn was going to go. Go on, Glenn.
Well, I'll shut up for a change. I was just going to ask, what is the context by which people approach you to be their mentor? I'm just curious as to, do you see a kind of, is there a, you know, kind of different reasons or a different approach, or, you know, are they different operational levels? Just curious from that thing.
I've had quite a few engagements that have come from quite different areas. I'll pick a couple to give you an example of the breadth of those interactions. Yeah. I think a lot of the people within the talent acquisition sphere come wanting to have an exposure to a perhaps a particular specialism or a subject within TA. So, for example, over the past 18 months, working with somebody who formerly reported to me and is now in our employer brand role, he was really interested in learning more about some of the fundamentals of employer brand around storytelling, the candidate journey. And a lot of his mentoring relationships around the business were based on him acquiring those skills. So although he reported to me, it was very much a, I want to learn more about this. Help me understand how I go about that. If I think on the flip side,
but there's
of that,
a direct benefit to you of doing that, though, because he reports to you. So
And also, you know, it's good for, I think it's good if you're sitting in a leadership role where you perhaps are sometimes pulled away from keeping your skills fresh and relevant, to remind yourself of some of the good fundamentals. And then, you know, you get the chance to reflect that back. Am I doing these things? You know, I'm giving somebody advice and guidance, but am I really reflecting that back? Am I walking that talk as well? And I think it's really common as well for most people in talent acquisition roles to mentor people in the business on some skills relating to talent acquisition. So what makes a great interview? Some really in the moment guidance on, here's how you've got a bunch of CVs, Mr. or Mrs. Hiring Manager. Here's what you need to do to make sure that you're treating those candidates equitably and fairly. Those really important tenets of what it is to have an inclusive mindset and inclusive approach. I often find myself in those mentoring situations. And actually, most recently, a couple of people have reached out to me for help on polishing their LinkedIn profiles. So I find myself in that mentoring role around, here's what you need to learn and the skills you need to acquire to attract people to our business. There are a lot of different aspects to it. I think the other skill is, once you've been in a couple of leadership roles, you often find yourself mentoring about leadership. So mentoring how to manage people, how to coach people. And that brings itself a whole other chapter.
Did somebody mentor you with that then?
Yeah, I've had the privilege of working for two particularly outstanding people in that mentoring relationship where I've had the chance to build my skills. And I think certainly when it comes to people leadership, you need that mentoring relationship where it's a really safe space for you to say, you know, I went and acquired this skill, but actually I now need to practice it on a live person. That's where that mentor-mentee relationship starts to blur that lines between coaching, because as soon as you're dealing with that really inconsistent commodity of a person, then it doesn't matter how much skill you acquired, how much capability or competency you developed. People are really unpredictable, and when you're managing them, it's really that's a good example of where that mentoring coaching line really gets blurred.
Okay, so let's define those two, because I have my theory, you probably have your theory. So to me, coaching is, I ask you questions to get you to come up with the answer.
Yes.
Mentoring is a little bit more tell. So I've got the experience, I'm telling you what I would do in that situation, and you can obviously take it or not take it.
What's your take on it, Glenn?
Well, I
anyone add comments, by the way, I'd love to. We are watching the.
Yeah, I agree with the coaching piece. I think it's about coaching people to get to the point where they can kind of almost self-help, self-inform and make that decision themselves. I think there is an element of guidance, but to give somebody the answer sometimes, well, you're just giving them the answer based on your experience, and their experience or approach might be slightly different. So it's about helping them to find that, I guess, that individual path. In short, I kind of agree with Katrina, but don't wholly agree.
But I kind of don't. I haven't done it I haven't been in a company for 10 years, right? So I haven't done it from that point of view. So it's kind of different, isn't it?
I think I'm going to give the typical recruiter's wishy-washy answer of, actually, it's all it can be anything depending on the situation. And I, those traditional markers of coaching is helping your, helping the person you're coaching get to the answer themselves by asking them the right questions and uncovering, uncovering their perspective on the situation. Mentoring traditionally is sharing your take on skill and expertise, but here's the problem with that. The way I learned this skill is no longer necessarily valid. And just because I've acquired that skill or capability a certain way 15 years ago doesn't mean that the next person is going to develop their capability in the same way.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really hard for me to say. I think that line is quite distinct. You know, I take the example of working with Michiel. I learned a little bit about employer branding from reading a book and going, like, listening to things. There's much more available now that he can go and find out for himself in a completely different way. And what he takes away from that would be very different. And that's where that traditional view of mentoring, I think, has changed.
Yeah.
We've got a great comment here. Oh, sorry, okay, cool. I interjected.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, no. Sorry. Sorry, there's also stuff going on next to me. Gotta love having an old dog. Elizabeth Sandler, great comment. Lovely to have you watching. I think mentoring is also sharing experience and stories relevant to their situation as well, which I think is really, and you said storytelling earlier, didn't you?
Yeah. Definitely. I think Katrina's kind of comment there about the fact that she's been an independent, you know, she's been independently running her own business for the last 10 years. And yourself, you're working for, you know, a large corporate brand, right? So thinking about being a mentee, rather than maybe just sort of thinking about Katrina, author, speaker, influencer.
Don't call me that. It always sounds a bit like polluted influencer.
Think about it from a mentee perspective. They'd be like, oh, wow, could be a really great mentor for me. But actually, you've got to really think about the wider context, right? If you're working in a large corporate business and you want to navigate that, is that aligned to, you know, kind of essentially what Katrina could offer you? So as a mentee, you've got to go in really thinking, right? Surely.
You do. And my take on it is you've got to be clear about what capability or skill or practice you are trying to develop, and pick the right person. I think a lot of mentor-mentee relationships fail because you see, you know, Katrina, I'll pick that as a great example. If I wanted to learn about influencing through social, I would argue that Katrina's got such a lot of experience and skill in that area. However, it doesn't mean that I'm going to be able to learn from her because my learning style might be very different. The way that I process information might be quite difficult.
Because and also, I did it by accident.
Being skilled at something doesn't necessarily mean you're good at passing that skill on. Because I think that's where mentees really need to put the work in, because a lot of the mentor-mentee relationship is built on a different capacity to coaching. In coaching, you've got to trust the person that you're working with to give you the right way to unfold the answer yourself. I think
they don't have to be in the industry at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So my coach, Roderick, I mean, yes, he's got HR experience of old, but he's never done my side of it. And he just really listens to me and then either repeats the words back I've said or questions me in such a way that I sit here going, it's amazing, light bulb.
That's that breakdown, I think, that happens quite a lot in that mentor-mentee relationship, which is, well, I wanted this skill out of this person and I don't feel I'm getting it. And probably on the mentor side, they're thinking, well, I'm telling you everything I know. Why aren't you using that? You have to... the contracting part of that relationship really up front. I think if you're going to be a mentor, you have to be super honest about whether or not you can give the person what they're asking. Charlotte, how do I be a great leader? I honestly don't know. I can give you some advice, but I can't tell you how to manage people very well. Just because I'm doing it, I'm skilled at it.
Yeah. One thing I thought of when you were kind of talking about the number of kind of mentees that you're currently sort of coaching, how do you find the balance on time? How do you allocate? You know, I mean, do you just select one? Do you select two, three? I mean, how do you go about assessing that yourself?
Glenn, here's an example of what I would not be very good at. I would not be very good at mentoring anybody on time balance.
to be fair, neither would I.
I am very unashamedly proud to only choose to mentor on subjects that I'm particularly passionate about, because I think that makes you find the time. So I tend to work around finding a way to engage and motivate people, particularly in that manager employee relationship, and usually around talent engagement. So that candidate journey side, trying to improve the way we are offering candidates an experience. I don't spend very much time on things like talent management anymore. I don't spend a lot of time on interview skills so much anymore. So I've tried, I think that helps you decide as a mentor where you want to spend your time. So number one, I think that's
important. Yeah.
The other thing about it, and this is on the mentee side as well, you have to be super bloody disciplined about where you're going to put the time and effort in. And in my job, it actually comes down to me blocking it out for an hour or so a week. And it is, okay, well, I've got that call with such and such tomorrow. I better brush up and just make sure I am telling him or her the right place to go for this stuff. And also...
So that's actually really interesting to know, because like I said at the beginning, I often find it a time suck, and I don't want to seem harsh, but time, precious resource. We're not getting it back. What you're giving us now on this show, you're not getting it back. It's gone, right? So you're not only allocating an hour a week or whatever the figure is, it could be 30 minutes, but you're preparing for that.
Particularly.
So you're actually giving like an hour and a half. And this goes back to my thing the other day when I got so angry when people don't make calls that they've requested, that they don't understand that you prepare, you interrupt your flow of work, you then dedicate that time, and then you go back, hopefully back to your flow of work, which can take an hour to get back to.
And you know, for if anybody in my team ends up watching this, I'll say, hey, Charlotte reschedules a lot. And that's true. And that's usually because, you know, the one-to-one conversations I have with, I've got four team leads in my regions. I've got two in Germany and two in the rest of Europe. Those one-to-one conversations, there is no point as a mentor having that conversation if you're not 100% dedicated to that moment in that point in time, because you have to be so tuned into the subject in hand. And if I can't give them that time in that moment, we just move it until we can. I think it's easier when you're working in a large matrix organization and you are deliberately having that time created, if you like, in your role to do that. It's harder with a couple of, there is one particular mentor relationship I have with somebody that I've continued over a couple of years who used to work with me, who I don't see so much anymore. That's very much a, I need your time on this subject. And it is, okay, well, I've got an hour next week. Let's sit down and make that time. Realistically, it's not just the little bit of time you spend beforehand. I think particularly mentoring about people coaching and line management skills, because then you always end up wanting to follow up afterwards and say, the advice that I gave you, the route that I advised you could take, how did that actually work out? Because this is the other part. I think,
like, have you actually used it?
And we talked earlier on about using your mentoring relationship to sharpen and hone your own skills. And if you're not taking that back into the cycle, then you're probably not getting that relationship as a mentor either.
So I'm hearing a few things here. One is, because I always feel like I'm offending the person that I'm not giving time to, but actually mentees need to find the right person and then be respectful if they're honest enough to go, either I don't have the time, or I don't have the skills, or I don't have the passion for it, therefore I'm not prepared to find the time. It's almost like they have to respect you saying, look, no, and it's not about them. It's just about you're being realistic about. It's not easy, right, giving up all that energy and time.
And for the mentee as well, you know, we jokingly talked about this last week when I used my little Star Wars metaphor, do or do not, there is no try. And I think that's probably the difference between mentoring and coaching. Coaching, you're almost giving yourself the license to find the space and the time the area for reflection. Mentoring has to be much more action biased, and it has to be not so much about the cognitive thought and the reflection, but okay, what am I am lacking a skill or capability, or I need to refine or hone one. I need to give myself a block. Maybe I was thinking about this yesterday. Maybe one of the things that I would try actually as a mentor in my relationships is using like the sprint mentality over the course of a few weeks with my mentees, because I think it would drive me to be more efficient with my time as a mentor, and it would certainly drive my mentees to actually follow through with their actions.
Continual follow-up, right?
And I, you know, like I say, I think there's more rigor involved maybe in the mentor-mentee relationship than there is with coaching. Coaching's just looser.
Yeah, you made mention that you were mentoring people in kind of different geographies, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I was just curious, are there any other kind of considerations you have to take into account? If, you know, say for instance, you're mentoring somebody who's kind of in Germany or Italy. The reason I ask this question is somebody in the business I'm working for at the moment, she's based in Germany. She's Turkish born, but she's looking for a kind of mentor within our business, which is largely UK and US centric.
Yep.
I was just like, are there any other considerations you should really think about in that dynamic? If not,
I think they're the same considerations you have whenever you deal with people who don't share the same cultural background as you, which are you have to listen much, much harder, because I think that's the other balance that changes in the mentor-mentee relationship. Mentors should talk a little more than coaches should, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coaches are listening and asking questions. Mentors are sharing and advising and guiding.
Mm.
I think what has benefited me, and I've been fortunate enough over a number of years to have lots of different experiences with people from all over the world. And if I look back to my earliest experiences, a lot of it was me just trying to listen in and really understand more. And I think that's probably something for a mentor and mentee to consider if you are in that relationship that crosses a cultural boundary or a country-related boundary, because that first part of your relationship is listening to each other and working out if that's going to work. But that's the same consideration with any of those relationships. Is this person right to mentor me in this process?
Yeah.
There is a very practical side of it, though, and it's one that I laugh at all the time, because I learn some beautiful local colloquialisms. So I used a throwaway phrase last week, which was we were talking about something and I said it's like turkeys voting for Christmas, and I had to explain.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant.
And then my German colleagues Marcus and Ava, we speak every Tuesday morning, and they gave me a phrase last week. My local Macan vernacular is it's neither nout nor something. That's what we'd say.
Oh, yeah, nout queer the folk and all that. Mm.
The Germans would say it's neither meat nor fish. And so I learned I think there are these probably informal phrases and inflections that you just have to be really super mindful of in both mentoring and coaching relationships, that you're not taking things for granted that you would normally say in a really informal way. That has enriched my knowledge and understanding of the people that work with me. Tenfold.
That's so cool, man. Seriously. Just a question. Is the mentoring program within your current business a formal mentoring plan, i.e. like structured, is advocated by the business, or is it something you've just kind of generated yourself? Because my question was, do you think it's better for it to be organic or something that's kind of structural within a business that people can access?
There are formal mentoring programs that we have, but actually we don't have one in talent acquisition. So the mentoring that I'm taking on at the moment.
The most important freaking function. No.
I would argue, yeah.
Bringing the wrong people, company fails. But let's not sorry, don't mind me. She's having a rant. Is.
Get off the soapbox, Katrina. Come on, it's Friday.
Where's the wine? Pass the wine. Right.
Those relationships, those mentoring relationships around talent acquisition, I've always found to be a bit more informal. I think usually as well, because the other aspect, certainly in the role that I'm in at the minute, I've got a huge variety of experience and capability within the talent acquisition team. So we've got people in the team who've come from the internship route and have got maybe only a couple of cycles of recruitment underneath their belt. Whereas I've also got really seasoned pros who've recruited in a variety of different industries and a variety of different companies and have developed quite a lot of high-end skill. And so it's really hard to come up with a formal mentoring program when your function is still evolving. I would argue that that's the most important time to do it. But good mentor and mentee relationships aren't improved, I don't think, by having a formal program in place. The value of the relationship has to be, have you found the right person to give you the skill or the capability that you need?
You've mentioned that multiple times.
I get the point that it's time sucking. I've come to the conclusion that there really isn't any other way around it. It probably is just it's time.
But I find with Emma, because of what she's doing, that I'm so bought into, it doesn't feel like that at all.
Yes, yeah.
Because I know I'm making such an impact on what she's doing, and what she's doing is changing lives. So it's like, actually, I don't mind. And I think, is that something for the mentees to be a bit more aware of when they're coming into the situation? I mean, you're doing it within your, like, the world of work, I suppose, but
it's part of my job, you know, it's an expectation of my job, I guess.
Right. Because it's that kind of thing of like, well, what's in it for Katrina? If they're going to approach me, like you were saying earlier, Glenn, what's in it for me? I'm not saying I need to think of that. I'm thinking, do they need to be aware of that when they ask the question? Am I making sense, or am I just being a self-absorbed cow?
I think it's a kind of fair question. Again, it's about what is the emphasis on the mentee to think about, what they will learn, but actually, are they kind of aligned on some kind of values or mission actually really, you know, elevate the kind of relationship? Or is it something that's more practical, perhaps?
I think perhaps one of the things that might improve the value for the mentor is when you're starting in that early contracting phase, as a mentor, ask what the mentee is going to share back with you. Because I talked about it before, and I think it's really important for mentors to bear in mind. You have to sharpen your skills and experience in that relationship. Mm. You have to make sure that what you're saying is really still valid.
So therefore it's benefit, right? Yeah. Therefore it's... I feel the need to hide.
I think what Katrina was saying about her relationship with Emma is it's valuable to her because she feels she can see and feel the impact of what Emma's doing.
Yeah.
So perhaps in order for the mentor to feel it's valuable, contract with your mentee to say, I want to feel the impact of what you're doing. How are you going to show me the impact of what this is doing?
Yeah.
And I think that might be the paradigm shift between this is time and this is value.
Yeah, I'm learning too, because I'm learning all about a whole part that I just didn't know, you know, ex-player, ex-offenders, all of this. It's actually really fascinating. So that's why I feel less bothered when I say no to people now.
Yeah.
So kind of, kind of slightly more informal mentor, mentee sort of program. So DBR community has a kind of mentor mentee, just basically it's an Excel sheet where people fill out if they want to be a mentor. That's cool. Great. They outline it, mentee, what you're looking for, and it looks to try and connect people. Is there a way of kind of scaling that any further, or suggest that's actually a good starting point?
A posh Excel spreadsheet, like a Google sheet.
I've just done it. It's basically Tinder for mentors, right? So what you really need is this is what
which
I'm
is the reject?
For.
That would be me. Yeah.
But like,
so which way is reject? Left or right?
I don't know.
Someone tell us which way women just want. I reject. I've got time.
I wonder. You know, we do live in the kind of society now where you should be it feels like it would be a natural progression to say, "Here's what I'm offering." For somebody else to say, here's what I'm seeking, and for something to go, da-da-da, there you go. And I don't think it would work with coaching, but I do think it might work with some of the skills-based stuff around mentoring.
Because I'm just kind of thinking.
Oh, I know who was telling me. I now need to open something. I was trying to remember. Sorry. Okay. You know when you know someone was telling you about this amazing tool that's for mentoring, but it's only for the Fortune 250. It's like, I now know who it was. So I'm just being really rude and going into my messages. Please don't ping me, anybody.
What do you reckon about kind of almost like cross-industry mentoring? So if, you know, you're looking for a mentor outside of your own industry to maybe help you with soft skills, maybe take a different perspective on leadership, what's your thoughts on that approach for a mentee?
I'm thinking back to sort of some of the early experiences I had about gaining management skills, and I think if I draw on the experiences I had with talking to people who probably didn't share any HR or people industry related expertise with me, I learned probably a more flexible style, and I certainly learned I did acquire some basic commercial skills by going to somebody who was a financial controller, because I couldn't read a balance sheet. It was at that sort of time when the emphasis was on recruiters learning to be more commercially savvy. And I couldn't find anybody around me within HR who had that commercial mouse. it is super important, certainly from a talent acquisition perspective, that the skills that make you credible to your business are not going to come just from being a great recruiter. So if you need to learn how to read code, go and find somebody who has the skills that can help you read a couple of lines of basic code or understand the difference between low code, front end, back end, whatever it is. You're not going to get that from your buddy, the recruiter down the road, to the extent that you would from a person who is a fantastic developer. In the same way that your commercial skills, you're probably going to get the best advice and the best competency from somebody who is a financial controller or who does it for a living. And I think, therefore, it's really, this is where you come back again to picking the right mentor for the right job. And whether or not, you know, another American phrase, those pinch hitters that you put the person up going to give you the right result in that scenario. Yeah. So I think cultivating a network of good mentors outside of your industry is probably the if you're serious about your learning and your development, as a mentee, stop going to the same person or the same group of people all of the time. You'll also get, by accident, the difference in communication style. You'll absorb a different perspective. You'll probably broaden your horizons culturally, because you might talk to somebody who grew up in a completely different industry paradigm to you as well. So
you're basically saying, get out of your echo chamber, aren't you? So just before I forget, Portia King was talking about grasp.hr, so grasp is into grasp. .hr, but it's all Fortune 250 up, but we little companies, we're just but it's very cool. And also Lee has a comment here, which I'm going to show. I love being in on Facebook. From my perspective, being a mentor is more about helping or creating a space for the mentee to uncover something they actually already know, something that they knew before but never recognized its value. Many times this comes through doing and experiences, not some theory you may have learned but have never really applied.
I think that's a really interesting point of view, because I think what we were saying earlier about that boundary between coaching and mentoring.
Yeah.
That's the coaching approach of helping you uncover the answer. But if you translate that from mentor, it might be a skill that it's lying dormant in you. So when was the last time you had to use this, or have you applied this skill or capability in a different way?
Because what you're also doing is you're encouraging curiosity.
Yes.
Go out of your echo chamber, go and talk to other areas, go and find a different perspective on what we're doing, which I also think is really cool.
I think Lee's comment there, the last part, I mean, you know, a lot of people, you know, kind of accumulate theory that they don't necessarily use. It's okay to share that with somebody, because somebody might actually take that theory and apply it themselves. So I think there's still value in, you know, just it's that learning piece, right? And the continual learning. So if you look at, if Katrina is an example, she has a coach. And she's mentoring Emma. So the continual learning happens through that. So, you know, I guess the question is really, should mentors continue to seek mentors? You know, if you're a mentor to somebody, is there value in you having a mentor as well?
Well, I certainly wouldn't book a coach that doesn't have a coach. That's extremely crucial. So it probably is the same. Maybe I need a mentor. Who wants to mentor me? Imagine the hell it would be.
But I think the interesting thing to me is we can have, if you think about that spectrum of mindset between a very fixed mindset and a very elevated growth mindset, I don't think it's possible to be a really good coach without being quite far towards the end of a growth mindset. I do think in certain circumstances you can be a great mentor if you are somewhere in the middle or even at the lower end of that spectrum. So again, it's just being mindful as a mentee what you are, what you intend to get from that relationship, and are you prepared to say, I'm going to practice this skill or capability or expose it or develop it or refine it or whatever it is, and then I'm prepared to end that part of my mentoring relationship and go somewhere else for something else. And it is much more, I think it is much more modular, whereas a coaching relationship is much more grow.
True. On that point around kind of ending the mentor-mentee relationship, certainly if it's been, you know, kind of it's been a relationship that, you know.
So you do know which way it is to swipe. A bit of lying baggage.
I truly
don't know. That thing will never pollute my phone.
Do you know when to, I mean, and when is the right time to kind of end it? Because it could feel really quite uncomfortable if you go, okay, cool, that's that's us done then. Does that
have you been dumped by a mentee?
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
great question. That's where I was going.
How could anyone dump you? Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I never got over. I think I've only probably learned that lesson in the past maybe 18 months to 2 years. I think, again, this comes back to that contracting phase of your relationship.
Yeah.
We have to agree up front when it's okay to take the water wings off and let you go and do it on your own. And I, you know,
are water wings like the blow up
armbands? Yeah. And I think that if you've got a really highly developed skill as a mentor, you will say, I don't know how long or how many sessions it's going to take, but you will know that you're ready to fly solo when you feel like this, or you observe this behavior in yourself.
Yeah.
Or you have to make it okay for me as your mentor to say you're ready to go. Mm. Whereas I think what the mentee can do in that situation is be really honest about what their goal is about this and say, therefore, if we're not progressing towards that goal, then this relationship isn't working. And you have to contract and make it safe to break up if that's not happening. Nobody's fault and nobody's blame. But I do think I used to get that wrong quite a bit, and probably on both sides.
I love this. Couldn't get an answer from the audience as to swipe left, whichever way, but we got this. Swimmies. In the US. Hi, David. No, didn't answer my swipe left though. I do love this from Trish though on LinkedIn. I joined late, but school mentor programs are also very valuable. Local schools working with local businesses. Digressing comment, just ignore it, but I just thought that was quite cool as well. We probably need to do more of that.
I think that's mentoring in its purest form, really, because it's not just the experience that comes with being skilled at a particular industry or profession. It's actually this is how this skill applies in the business or the adult world. And I think one of the most impactful things that happened to me when I was at school was somebody came and gave us a speed reading skill. And I remember that day, and I remember what we learned, and I still practice that now. That was very much a mentoring program. It was, I'm going to show you how to digest large chunks of information really quickly. We were in sixth form, and I remember thinking, I wish everything we learned in school was taught like this, because it was, here's what you're going to do today. This is the skill you're going to learn, and here's how you're going to apply it. Whereas so much of the stuff you learn in school, you don't necessarily know how it's going to apply. When was the last time you used Pythagoras theorem in your day job? I haven't used it recently, but I think, you know,
I left school like a long time ago. I'm like definitely the longest time ago of the three people on this call.
Marginally.
Just some appreciation coming in, by the way. Just some love for the topic, which is really cool.
But I think I think that that's something that I would be really passionate about seeing more of. That businesses, it's my experience that businesses often do that with an end goal in mind, like we have to promote STEM or we have to promote careers for women or International Women's Day is coming up, let's do something for girls in schools. It's much more valuable to offer yourself as a mentor or offer a mentorship program with no real objective in mind other than to share some of those skills and experiences. And you'll probably find you get a much more authentic response, and you'll probably find inadvertently you'll build a much stronger employer brand as a result of doing it for no apparent end goal reason.
But also imagine going in and saying, like, my job, whatever it is, because it's so mixed up, but even what you guys do didn't really exist 5 to 10 years ago in its form now, all thanks to the internet. And what will these kids be doing in 5 to 10 years? Who knows? And imagine just going in and saying, well, you know, I started the traditional route and I did do the degree, or I didn't in my case, but, you know, I started in the world of work and then now I'm doing this. And it's like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing day to day. It all changes constantly. It's amazing. So it would be so eye-opening to them, because I bet they're all just being pushed all the same routes as normal.
Yeah, and I think career mentoring is probably a big gap in the education industry right now. And by that I mean, how do you get noticed for a job? How do you promote yourself as a candidate? How do you navigate those horrifically stormy waters of selecting your employer? How do you know what's happening to your application? You know, lifting the veil from people's eyes about the things that schools tell them, and that's not how it really works in the real world. So,
and the fact they can actually select their employer, like what you just said. So when I started out in the world, it was not select your employer. No. It was, you know, a little job advert. What a difference of a world we live in.
Any TA people here today who haven't, like listening in today, who haven't been a mentor, maybe think about just contacting your old school or your old college and saying, I'm going to run a 3-week program on how to write a great CV, how to write your LinkedIn profile, and how to navigate your first interview. There's really easy and value added payback to your own community and a practice for a mentoring skill. You know, if you're looking for a greenhouse to become a mentor and you need a safe place to practice, it's going to happen. And you talked earlier on, Katrina, about having impact. It's so much more rewarding to do that when you're going to have
it
a genuine
backwards.
But I, you know, anybody listening today could go and spend
some time. Yeah, that's a really good idea. And because they have no expectation.
No.
They've no world of work experience. So they don't know whether what you're saying is correct or not. So if you make an error, no one's going to know. So that sounds like brilliant advice.
Advice is you can tell them anything.
But I could treat this book. Become a
recruiter. It could be anything written in here. I don't. But could, why is it that we just fall into recruitment? There you go. We should actually get out and say, actually, this is a very rewarding career. If you're excited about it. By the way, Charlotte is one of the most excited about doing her job people I know, as far as being proud to be a talented talent acquisition professional. And honestly, if you're not excited to do this job, go and change jobs.
It's so
Friday rant. That's my second one this show. I'm well and truly on my soapbox today.
you've got to be proud about what you do. I mean, I must admit, I remember when I first started in recruitment, when you used to tell people, you know, sort of meeting for the first time over drinks out, and they'd be like, oh, what do you do? And you'd be like, oh, I'm a recruitment consultant. And, you know, obviously there was a stigmatism around kind of recruitment consultants and how that approach generated a certain reputation, some sort of, 10, 14, 15 years ago now for me, I think. Yeah. But I think the credibility around recruitment now is a lot higher, and people should be very proud to be part of acquisition and recruitment. There's a real value in the industry. Absolutely. And the people in it.
Jerry Crispin. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
God in our space, as far as I'm concerned, probably embarrasses him every time I say that. I facilitated in the fall a panel of high potential early career hires in top employers at ERE. Their number one benefit they described in their first job was a mentor. The number one want in 2 years to retain them was a career coach. Not surprising. And great discussion. And we have one over here as well. Oh, we're doing that in a few weeks at the London Academy, mentoring on CVs and interviews.
Cool.
From That's Rob White Penn, who's the only person that ever tunes in on Periscope. I can actually show it. Look, Periscope.
That's so cool.
We actually get quite good views over there. He's the only one that ever comments. That 4G was doing really, really well until that moment.
I feel like
I do feel
like that is a really valuable way to practice becoming a mentor. And you know, these are particularly for people in TA, these are skills that we have. If you're a good TA professional, you should know what makes a great CV. You should know how to coach somebody to get them through that very first interview. And those are things that shouldn't be too time consuming, because you're probably not going to have much of an ongoing relationship with those people past that transaction. Get out and go and give some of your time, I would say.
But looking at the fact, it's also retention. So as you said, it improves your brand. Obviously, it does help the mentor, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then helps with the retention, which is a huge problem. Yeah. So that's really cool.
Sure.
We're like at the end. I can't believe how fast these go. Yeah.
See, that was so quick.
We could talk about this topic for another hour. That's the trouble. Like, it's so huge.
It's a great topic. It's a really great topic.
It is. And actually, just thinking about it before today and having these conversations today, and I think a couple of comments from the people who tuned in and shared their view. Thank you very much, because I think this is the other thing that you need to be as a mentor. You need to self-reflect and actually consider whether or not you're doing what you're saying you're doing. And actually, there's been a couple of really nice sort of mind-popping moments for me where I think I could do better at that. So this conversation has helped me today as well.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely helped me, because I actually feel like I can say no for a start, say no without feeling guilty about saying no.
Yeah.
Mm. But then also that, am I putting it back in? Yeah. Like you said, the circle of it.
Totally. And if people want to see you and talk to you a little bit more about kind of mentoring, menteeship, where can they find you other than Disrupt HR Newcastle in?
No, been gone. She opened it with such panache. The videos will be out in about a month. I'll try not to take a month, but they do.
I'm thinking about the next one.
Charlotte Mummery.
You're going to be at the next one, right?
First speaker at the first Disrupt HR Newcastle. That would be on the 14th of October.
Yeah.
I've cheekily put it down as the same venue, but haven't actually booked the venue. I probably should do that.
Oh, I'll get in touch with them, Dora.
More pizza, bring it on.
Yeah, pizza and dirty fries. Yeah, I will be at Disrupt HR Newcastle in October, but the very tried and tested method of just hit me up on LinkedIn.
With a highly personalised invitation to connect stating that I saw you on the social recruiting show and you were fabulous. Would probably work quite well.
Swipe right for mentor.
Whichever way it is.
I do fancy this mentor matchmaking thing though, so if anybody has some idea how to make a mentor matchmaker, that might be
one that's like for the Fortune 250. We need one down for the rest of us who are in SME space. You know
your team's already creating a GIF or a meme. Swipe
I know.
Right.
I know. I'm looking at my email, like, oh, really?
Actually, if you just sit there and do that for a second, we'll just collect the video out. Sorted. Have you any final words of wisdom you'd like to share with us, or do you feel like you've got it all out before we close out the show?
I feel like I've probably said everything that's wise, but I would just encourage those people who the last thing I would say is if you're in a mentor-mentee relationship that isn't working at the minute, be brave and bold and get out of it.
End
it. And don't continue it if it's not adding value.
Charlotte, that's you've so been good. Amazing, man. Seriously.
She's so amazing. Good.
I loved it. So
she's
amazing. I've had such a fun time. Thank you for having me.
I know. Is it next week? So
yes,
last week, and actually even this one, the more human topics are going down really, really well. Yeah. Less of the saucy kind of stuff. No offense to my beautiful community sources out there. But next week we have championing the whole strengths-based work.
Love it.
In space, we have Ian Pettigrew, Kingfisher coach. I mean, who doesn't love Ian Pettigrew? My God, he is the reason that I went to Africa and I do so much work for Hope for Justice as well. He has personally changed my world. So we got him on to talk strength. So I think we will make sure we do more of those, the really human side. Like this has been the self-love that we're going to try and get more of it because it seems to be what you guys appreciate. If it's not, of course, feel free to drop me a message and tell me because, you know, we want this to be for the audience as well, not just for Glenn and I to have a chat with somebody fabulous every Friday.
Exactly, which is an upside, obviously. We enjoy
complete
that part.
Upside. I know, we always run over too because we're too enjoying it. So we shall see you all, everybody, same time next week, which would be 3 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time and 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I get in trouble, don't I? Thanks again, Charlotte, so much for being on
the
show.
Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Bye.
Take care.